Hi, everybody. I'm Danny Schechter, your news dissector. A couple of seconds off here in terms of being a little out of sync, but that's not unusual for me. We're on News Dissector Radio on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and PRN.FM is another way to reach us. You can call us at 874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Kat Waters is in the studio with me, and we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to share this program with you because we're very thrilled that Dan Rather, former CBS News anchor and victim of CBS, is going to be joining us in a few minutes. But first, this new rap song about Occupy.
In it for the long haul, no rapping gimmick. Yeah, I speak it from the soul for 110% in it. The DJ spin it, I'm so LV, city of Senate. We in it to win it like the Super Bowl of pinnacle. Yeah, your little shine, I'll dim it, huh? You dim wit, matter of fact, crackers and caviar, you dip ish. Yep, ish freak without a paddle against me in a battle. Them 16s weak, flows pip squeak from jump I had you. Now don't get mad, fool, just recognize, take notes. Well, I take totes, you clowns are fake jokes. When it come to this rhyming, I'm sharp and clear as a diamond. I hear the blind them, nope. I'm educating, refine them, now elevate where your mind is. Because so many are mindless from media trying to blind us. Paid off by corporate giants, basic modern day tyrants. Vultures soaring and flying, so take notice, stay focused, don't be ignoring the problems,
The larger the problem, the harder the solution. Part of the problem, a part of the solution. It's your life, which route are you choosing? It's not right, 99% losing. The larger the problem, part of the solution. Part of the problem, a part of the solution. It's your life, which route are you choosing? It's not right, 99% losing.
What's going on in the world today? It seems like more parents is killing them seed. Real talk.
We try to feature some of the coolest music we can find that deals with political issues. That's one of them. Occupy.com is the website, the new website of the Occupy movement that you can find a lot of different resources on, including this song. Kat, there's going to be some sort of event here in New York, I think at Bryant Park tomorrow. Disobedience School, what's that about?
Yeah, tomorrow is the first day, March 26th, 12 noon at Bryant Park for the OWS Disobedient Summer School. Just teaching people how to not go along with the system and be fueling the very system that's just using their energy and money to turn around and screw them with.
So Occupy is still going, still growing, still active, not only in New York, but around the world. And that's one of the issues and topics that we've been covering with regularity, as well as talking, of course, about our media system, how it's achieving the goal of misinforming us, which is, seems to be what its purpose is these days. We're hoping to get Dan Rather with us in a few minutes. You know, Dan has written a new book.
It's called Rather Outspoken, My Life in the News by Dan Rather.
Which is an interesting story because, of course, he's been involved in TV news forever. He reached the pinnacles as the anchor of CBS News, but he also discovered what happens when you work in corporate media and you cross the line somehow into exposing things you're not supposed to be exposing, apparently. And Dan Rather was essentially forced out of CBS and has been involved in a lawsuit. He lost the lawsuit, but he'll be able to speak with us. Dan, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Dan Rather, good to see you. I'm another Dan, of course. We've met Danny Schechter, the news dissector. And, you know, I'm really interested in this new book of yours, and I just read a conversation about it. This guy, Joe Hagan, who did a story about you for the Texas Monthly.
Excuse me one second, because this might be important to me. You spoke to him?
No, I haven't spoken to him. I spoke to him at a lecture he gave the other day, but I read a comment that he he made, you know, saying that the book was depressing, you know, because how dare you raise these concerns about what happened to you at CBS and the way, you know, from what I can see, you were not only betrayed by the higher-ups, but you were set up in a way with a kind of Star Chamber proceedings there that Mary Mapes, your producer, has dissected brilliantly and you basically forced out. And at the people who really were the losers here, the American people, who, you know, somehow felt that the story you did about George Bush was wrong, when in fact what was really a question were the quality of some documents that you used. Talk to me about that.
Well, first of all, some very good people, including Mary Mapes, lost their jobs, and I eventually lost mine, for reporting a true story. There is no question, President Bush himself has never denied it, that the truth of our story was what we said it is. Number one, he got in the Air National Guard in Texas in a so-called champagne unit because of the influence of his very influential father. That's number one. Number two, that while he was serving in the Guard, he disappeared for a year with no explanation. Those two things have never been contested. Those two things were true.
John Lennon had a missing weekend, supposedly, in L.A. during his life. This was a whole year that was missing, wasn't it?
Yes, and anybody who's ever been in the service knows that you have to be accounted for in the service. If you're missing even overnight or a couple of days, it's called AWOL, absent without leave. If you're absent for a longer time without explanation or without permission, it's desertion. Now, I want to emphasize this happened when George Bush was a younger man. That one can say, well, I understand he's not wanting to go to Vietnam. There was never any joy in reporting it. It wasn't anything personal. But it was a part of his military record, which had, number one, been well hidden, and number two, had been distorted.
And at the same time, weren't, you know, some of his more fervent supporters involved in this swift boat business attacking John Kerry, who was a war hero, discrediting him, trying to accusing him of various, you know, high crimes and misdemeanors, it seemed, at the same time trying to distract attention from the other issues that you raised and other journalists had raised about Bush's so-called war record.
That's correct. That is correct. Now, those who, for their own partisan, political, or deeply felt ideological purposes, found this to be unpleasant, inconvenient truths, sought to smear those who put the story out, smear us and others, and by attacking what they thought was the process by which we got the story. And their camouflage, their cover, their veil, if you will, was to say, well, some of the documents they put forward were never proven to be absolute, without question, true. Now, let me make clear. I believe the documents were true at the time. I have believed it ever since, and I believe it now. However, whatever one thinks about how we arrived at the truth, what the process was, that's what the attack was on, the process. Well, yes, they may have gotten to the truth. Nobody ever said that, but the implicit was they got to the truth, but they got to it the wrong way. All of this was political camouflage, and I think well recognized. If CBS corporate, the corporation, had stood behind the story as they had stood behind controversial stories in the past, Dr. Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement, the Vietnam War, and ran counter-reporting, any number, and for that matter, Ed Murrow in the McCarthy period, that's what they should have done. They didn't do that. They caved because, and I don't like to say this in this way, but it's true, in today's media world, very big business, international corporations who own about 80% or more of the national distribution of news are in bed with very big government in Washington, whether that government be led at any particular time by Republicans or Democrats. And it does affect what people read and see and hear in the news.
Yeah, but Dan, in this particular case, the president, you know, the overlord, if you will, of Viacom, the company that was the holding company of, you know, CBS at that time, expressed and said that he would be more comfortable with the Republican administration. That certainly speaks to a signal that gets sent to the news division down the line. Don't upset the boss. don't upset the corporation. And it seemed as if you were treading, you know, in an area where they didn't want you, in a sense, to be treading. And as a consequence, you know, were willing to distance themselves from their own news anchor, which is unbelievable given, A, how much money they were paying you, B, given how long a career you've had and how many awards and recognition and audience people who have admired you over the years to be able to, you know, we all know in television, I worked at ABC 2020, no, everybody is supposedly dispensable, disposable and the like. But, you know, when it gets to somebody who's a anchor man, who's given, you know, basically the shaft this way, this really loses respect for the networks, doesn't it?
Well, that's for each, of course, individual to decide. But one thing you said, I want to make clear, that Mr. Sumner Redstone, who owned Viacom, which owned CBS corporate and, in effect, owned CBS News, made it very clear. He said publicly, I want George Bush to be reelected as president. It's good for me. It's good for Viacom. It makes us a lot of money. This is America. He's quite free to say that. No problem with that. The difficulty comes when he the news division, which is advertised and was advertised at the time as independent and separate from the corporation, operated somewhat in the public interest. That had been the CBS News tradition. Of course, they got the message. And the reason the company folded, look, we can dance around it, but the reason the company folded is because Mr. Viacom, that'd be Sumner Redstone, blew a gasket. He said, fire all of them. You know, he said, on one hand, I want George Bush reelected. His reporters dig out this story, which I emphasize again is a true story. No question about the facts as we presented the story. And we got run off.
Yeah, well, I take offense personally as a television journalist who's been there and done that in some way, you know, to have people, you know, accusing you of being, you know, negative when, in fact, you're trying to clarify what really happened there. And you know, it's your life, but it's also the life of this whole business here that's really at stake because it's lost so much respect and support from viewers. You know, when this sort of thing can happen behind closed doors, so-called investigation, which was biased from the beginning, and pillories you, you know, this is something that, to me, is not just about you. This is about anybody. If they can do it to Dan Rather, they can do it to anyone. That's how I read it.
This just goes to show you, hi, Dan, this is Catherine Waters, like, what happens when money becomes the priority? I mean, when they choose money as the priority and that Viacom just wants to make money, it has to be at the expense of the truth and real media. I mean, you know, they have to choose. And if they choose the money, then the truth goes out the window.
Well, exactly. And I want to make clear, this happened 8 years ago. I left CBS News, was forced out 6 years ago. I'm well past it. I'm at peace. I'm continuing to work and love my work. It's not about me any longer. What it is about is having people understand how much of what's frequently called big media, how it works, how it really works behind the scenes, as opposed to how it's supposed to work and how many people think it works. Exactly. That's one reason it's in the book. The book is about less than a quarter about this. But for anyone who is interested, I thought, well, let's get the details. Let's get my side of the story between two covers, and anybody who's interested can get into details. But I do want to come back to, one can argue about whether the documents were what they're supposed to be or not. I emphasize I still believe them. But the truth of the story is undeniable and has not been denied, I repeat by emphasis, by President Bush himself. It was a clear case. Look, the top of the corporation wanted him reelected. The big man in the corporation said so, and when the story came out, a true story, it was not advantageous to his candidate, so he says, he was quoted as saying directly, fire them all. And eventually they did.
It looks like it's getting worse, Dan, to me. I mean, when Les Moonves, the head of CBS, has a $70 million contract, you know, they're paying each other's bankers' salaries. They're acting like bankers. They're acting without much regard, it seems to me, for the the duty to inform the American people, which was the mandate, the mission, if you will, of CBS News over all those years. Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite, yourself, and so many others in the trenches there at CBS who set a standard for everyone in the TV news industry. And to be able to just, you know, push you aside this way, you know, I think does a disservice to their memory as well. Sorry. I mean, I don't see this as a personal Dan Rather story. I see it as a corporate story.
Well, that's what it is. And look, one doesn't want to be preachy about it, and I'm not preachy about it, but we all understand.
Let me be preachy, okay?
In a country such as ours, a free press and a independent, truly independent press, fiercely independent press when necessary, is the red beating heart of freedom and democracy. Part of the contract and the compact that the owners of very large, for example, television networks had for a very long time was, listen, we're in business to make money. That's what we're mostly about. However, we want to give back, and one way we give back is we see news as a public trust and operate news as a public service. That was the case with CBS for well over half a century. With the consolidation, with one big company after another buying it, that went all out the window and disappeared completely.
Well, I'll tell you, Dan, you know, at a much smaller front in this whole media war, my own the radio station I worked in Boston, WBCN, for many, many years, a leader in the progressive rock arena, but also in news, where I dissected news, was bought by CBS ultimately, and they basically dumped the whole news department. And even to this day, as they're going back online, they don't want any news. They don't want any opinion. They just want, you know, more music, less talk, and to pacify the public. One last question, and this has to do with the pressure that some of us in television feel, you know, to show it, you know, to have documents that we can illustrate it. Is part of this the pressure of the TV format to try to, you know, glitz it up or sex it up in some way so that we can hold the audience?
Well, there is some of that. That's definitely part of the pressure, and it is a factor. However, I come back with our story. It was never about the documents per se. The attackers used that. They saw it as our weakest point. Perhaps it was our weakest point. Since they couldn't deny the truth of the story, they had to attack it in some way. But what you outline is one of the weaknesses of television. Television is at its best when it takes you there, when it can take you to the scene of a tsunami, a hurricane, space launch. Television's weakness is depth of perception, context. It has difficulty with that. What one needs, of course, as a consumer, is to sketch across all media, including the Internet. That gives you the best chance to get a full picture of what's going on.
Well, you know, Dan, I promised that I'd only have you on for a bit. I know you have another appointment. So thank you so much for joining us this morning. You know, it's a conversation I'm sure we could continue, and hopefully we can continue. But we're going to be moving on now to our next guest. Thank you so much, Dan.
Thank you so much. Thank you very, very much.
My pleasure. We have Bill Still, who's going to be joining us in a minute, talking about the Bilderberger meeting. If you haven't heard about it and you don't know what I'm talking about, stay with us and we'll tell you about it, because this is something that's very significant. Bill did a documentary on YouTube. I'd like to play you a little bit of it, give you a little taste of what we're talking about, and Bill's going to join us.
Good afternoon from Washington. I'm still reporting on the economy. There are so many big stories going on. Greece, fake gold bars, the wonderful public banking conference in Philadelphia. I'm going to cover them all in future days, but for today I want to speak directly to the Bilderberg Group, which will be meeting just down the street at the Westfields Marriott the weekend of May 31st through June 3rd. Unfortunately, the Bilderberg Steering Committee, which selects conference speakers each year, somehow forgot to invite me to give the keynote address at their conference. But I have prepared remarks should they decide to call at the last minute. They go something like this. Welcome to Washington, Bilderbergs. Now, despite the raucous demonstrations of the 99% going on outside the perimeter of the Marriott compound, I'm not going to scold you, too much at least, because I think I understand what motivates you, some of you anyway. And I just want to point out where we differ. First of all, let's address greed. Greed only supports consolidation of power and dictatorship. Greed never supports peace. Greed is the law of the jungle. It is the opposite of civilization. Greed is anti-civilization.
Hey, Bill, Danny Schechter here. Thank you so much for your patience and joining us a little later. Dan Rather, someone we have been trying to reach out to, and finally at the last minute said he could join us. So we have to try to squeeze more into our program. Bill, could you just give us a little background on yourself, about, you know, your own work and what you do for people unfamiliar with it?
Well, I started out life as a newspaper reporter, ran a small county weekly here out in the western Washington, D.C. suburbs, and then gradually went into freelancing on a national basis, started writing books in 1990, wrote the first New World Order book. Follow that up a couple years later with my first book on the Fed, which is called On the Horns of the Beast, the Federal Reserve and the New World Order. Followed that up with my first film, which is called The Money Masters, which we filmed in towards the tail end of 95 and actually released in 96, which just continues to have this amazing audience growth. Some people estimate that as many as 40 million people have watched The Money Masters online, and it consistently rates in the top 15 or 20 documentaries of all time.
Well, Bill, we have a guest in the studio who's a Coca-Cola worker who we're going to be speaking to a little bit later, who are involved in a fight for justice and equality for all up against the Coca-Cola company. And he just looked at me and says, I watched it too. So people are impressed with it. Now, this Bilderberger meeting, who are these Bilderberger people? What is it that they're going to be doing this weekend, and why does it concern you?
Well, they're the top 120, 150 wealthiest people in the world, and they just have a little club on, you know, how the world should go according to them. They represent a significant portion of the world's wealth. Nobody knows exactly how much it is. Nobody knows exactly what goes on in the meetings, but you can bet your bottom dollar the little reporting that does trickle out that they're about essentially erasing national borders, the justification of which is that once national borders are erased and everybody joins into a giant world confederation, call it the New World Order, call it whatever you like, that you know, their justification is then that'll put an end to war, and we can have all these extra resources to go off and fund all the social needs necessary, plus explore the stars, et cetera, et cetera. So there are many of them. There are some of them probably who are just strictly greed-based and don't give a hoot about all this.
But there are also, in addition to the wealthy elite, there's a political elite that they've sort of groomed or who, you know, show up at these meetings. Marco Rubio, for example, it's been rumored the choice of candidate in the running for vice presidential nomination under Romney apparently is going to be speaking. Jonathan, Edwards spoke there at a recent meeting. It seems to attract a lot of prominent people who speak at these events and then sort of forget that they spoke there and don't want known that they spoke there. And as a result, this becomes, you know, sort of a focus of conspiracy theories, in part because the media is not welcomed in these meetings. There's very little transparency, very little accountability, something that we could be and should be concerned about. True?
Well, yeah, that's why I did the YouTube on it. It's really the first time that I can remember that the meeting occurred in the United States, much less really close to me. So I took my camera down to the hotel the week before and expected I'd have to be sneaking in and just grab a couple shots here and there, but the thing was wide open. There was no security. There was a Subway Sandwich National meeting going on, so I was able to just walk around and film, you know, whatever I wanted to you know.
They have a very good turkey, you know, sandwich there, the Subway people, that I've been afflicted with or obsessed with for a long time. You know, Bill, this whole thing about the Bilderbergers and the World Economic Forum and the IMF and all these supranational organizations seem to suggest, and you put the, you know, used the phrase New World Order, so did George Bush Sr. How real is that in your view? Do you really think they want a world government? It looks like what governments that they have right now aren't working very well. I mean, Europe is collapsing and falling apart. The United States government is polarized and stalemated in many ways. Why do you think a world government somehow would be any better?
Well, it wouldn't be any better. That's the whole point that I'm making. They've attempted to bring about this new world order, this world government, for at least the past 100 years. And the truth of the matter is that people love their nation states. It's deeply rooted in the psyche of every individual. And I don't think, personally, they're ever really going to succeed. But they're going to cause a lot of havoc along the way. You know, I'd like to say something about the a comment on something that Dan Rather said. He said that big government was in bed with the big networks. And, you know, I think it's much more instructive to be a little more specific. It's not just that big government is in bed with big business. Big government is in bed with the big banks. And that's what the problem is. The problem is not that the government should get out of the banking business. It's that the banks should get out of the governing business.
Well, Bill, good point, and a point I can share as well. I know you've been very active in libertarian politics. I saw this video you did about somebody who I've interviewed in the past, Roger Stone, the political consultant who was Richard Nixon's so-called hitman and is now working with libertarians. Who knows why? But I'd like to ask you about that when we come back in a minute. Please stay with us. Bill Still, coming to us from Virginia here on News Dissector Radio on Progressive Radio. RadioNetwork.com.
We know that your life is hard, so please put down your guard. We'll send you a gift to give you a lift, a shiny new credit card. Don't fret if your funds are low. You can use it wherever you go. Whenever you do, your debts will accrue and give us a happy flow. It's so fantastic. Fantastic. When you pay with Blaster, wait for our bill to come, just pay the minimum, the interest will grow on the money you owe and make it.
This is PRN.FM, PRN, giving you a daily progressive take on the world.
Love, Lust, and Laughter. Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, a board-certified sex therapist and a marriage and family therapist. Guests are interviewed, and we sometimes dispense advice to create a format that is both informative and entertaining. If you can't listen live, go to the archives and rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope that you are coming with us.
Hi, this is Professor T. Love of Ebola Soul, a mixed stew of soul music. Come get your history lesson in soul music on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Tune in as I play soul music from 1949 to the present. Also, listen to Ebola Soul in the archives. If you like Ebola Soul, rate us in iTunes. Come and catch a groove on Ebola Soul. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Progressive Radio Network is extremely proud to announce the official PRN mobile app. Keep up with the Progressive Radio Network on the go, whenever and wherever, 24-7, with one-touch access to listen live, archives and podcasts of our latest shows, health, politics, and environmental news, featured op-eds, videos, and click to call us with just one touch. Plus, keep in touch with all our hosts via Twitter and Facebook. Download the app for free at prn.fm/mobile and keep moving forward with us.
This is PRN, PRN for the Progressive Radio Network.
To chase and to Wachovia, Wells Fargo, Sally Mae, to MasterCard and Citibank, and also B of A. American Express and Visa, Morgan Stanley too. In debt we trust, so pay we must, we owe it all to you.
Danny Schechter here on News Dissector Radio on Progressive Radio Network, PRN-FM. The number to call, 888-874-4888. It's a free call. Join us if you can or if you will. Cat Waters is here. Bill Still is with us in Virginia. He's just told us a little bit about this Bilderberger meeting. Catherine's thinking of going there. You want to chat with Bill about it? How close can you guys get if you do go?
I don't know how close they let you get. I mean, they just had a meeting this past winter in Zurich or near Zurich, Switzerland, like up in the hills, and you know, Luke Rudowski from We Are Change was there and was kind of showing how it they actually were able to talk to some of them when they did like one early morning walk on the property, and they were trying to talk to them, and of course, you know, they were just like talk to the hand. I mean, they wouldn't even engage the media. But Alex Jones, I know, is pumping like a lot of people. Alex Jones is supposed to be there, and he's asking a lot of the public to come down and bring a lot of awareness to the Bilderberg Group, which many people never heard of.
Bill, your thoughts on more protests at the Bilderberger meeting?
Well, yeah, that's why I went and filmed a week early, just because I didn't want to get involved in the mess of protests and all that. So I imagine it's pretty bad, especially since Alex is pumping all these people to come down. I mean, it's a good thing to do. It's a good thing to show that that people essentially like their nation states. They don't want to be herded into this new world order where power is consolidated to the ultimate level. It's absolutely the antithesis of democratic governance.
All right, skeptical question, Bill, for you. Okay, I mean, I'm saying this with my hand on my heart. I pledge allegiance and all the rest of it. But you know, don't we need in this age of globalization some forms of cooperation, some forms of international rules governing the flow of capital and the like, restricting the big multinational corporations from abusing their workers, abusing the countries that they're in economically and environmentally? Don't we need some kind of cooperation? Are you against all that?
Oh, no, absolutely. There has to be some sort of cooperation, but you just have to be so careful. You don't have to by default agree to any internationalist rule that comes down the pike. I mean, a lot of these labor problems could be solved merely by tariffs and excise taxes. Tariffs and excise taxes provided 90% of the funds needed by the U.S. government just at the turn of the century, at the beginning of the 1900s.
But Bill, what about, like, you know, outsourcing of jobs? You know, people, American jobs are disappearing. Jobs are popping up in low-wage countries.
Absolutely, I agree with you 100%.
In many cases, there are no rules governing, you know, these corporations. They're allowed to get away with anything, not only underpaying the workers, but abusing them and not allowing allowing them to have unions, which is another issue that sort of maybe grates a little bit on the libertarian approach, where, you know, you tend to view people as individuals without any kind of collective interest. Am I wrong on that?
Well, no. I mean, what do you think a democratic governance is? It's the fact that we can collectively, we the little people, can collectively gather together, and only by forming governments in that way can we have any hope of escaping the clutches of the money masters and their return to serfdom, which is all they're trying to do right now. They're trying to turn around this 1,000-year march that we've been on towards increasing democratic governance.
They really want to have the little guy with absolutely no leverage at all. I mean, just like barely hanging on by your fingernails, and you should be so grateful for that, while they just have all of the leverage.
Well, isn't that the essence of serfdom?
Totally.
Isn't that what the last 1,000 years of human history has been all about? Our human march out of that, our human march towards freedom. That's what they're trying to turn around.
Well, you know, certainly massive debt is a kind of a guarantee, if you will, of serfdom. You know, I thought like this was all about, you know, capitalism, but it's about feudalism in some ways, a return to feudalism, which was the serf economies. I just heard that the Senate, for example, has now refused to act on the rule that will allow student loan to double in July. So there'll be no relief for the students. And the student loan crisis is on the scale of the subprime housing crisis. So this is something that everybody is affected by, not just the kids and the students graduating from college. How are they going to pay these loans back if there are no jobs for them, if there are no opportunities for them?
Well, at the root of this is the artificial shortage of money, and that's what the problem is. Money must serve the public interest. Right, right now, it serves only the bankers' interest. Right. The bankers do not. All of our money, every dollar in the United States, is created as an interest-bearing debt by banks. Right. That's not the way it should be. Right. We don't have to have a national debt. You know how much we're paying in interest on our national debt right
how
now?
Much?
$540 billion per year. And by 2020, that will increase to $1 trillion a year, a cost that is entirely unnecessary. We can create our own money without debt.
And people that are bringing children into this world have no idea that their child owes about, you know, $100,000 of that national debt.
I just read a story about a guy who was paying off his student loan. He decided to pay it off with dollar bills, 114,000 of them, as his own little protest against this. We're joined in the studio, Bill. I think you'll be interested in their perspectives. Two of the workers who are part of what are called a Coke 16. These are workers for the Coca-Cola company who have been encountering racial discrimination and other problems. And one of you guys introduce yourselves first to start, because all this is moving so fast here, we haven't had a chance to talk. Yeah.
Hello, everyone. My name is Guillermo Nunez, and I would just like to say to Mr. Bill Still, I love your documentaries. I've seen them all, and I'm constantly recommending it to all my friends.
Well, thank you very much. I just put up one yesterday, too. The former Secretary of Defense for the Nation of Canada gave just a dynamite presentation at the public banking seminar the last weekend in April, and I finally put it up yesterday. It's just absolutely mind-blowing to see a guy 90 years old who was in the Canadian Parliament at the end of the Great Depression telling how when the Canadian banking system actually turned back to debt-free money, they turned an unemployment rate of over 20% in the nation of Canada down to 1% in a single year just by issuing debt-free money, which we could do, which every nation could do in a period of 2 weeks, completely turn this economy around.
Well, just as a matter of hospitality here on the program, Kat, stand by. Don't get upset, but I want to introduce our other guest. I want him to introduce himself. He's here in the studio also. The last time I looked, he's not Swiss cheese. He's not a bottle of Coca-Cola. He's a real person. Introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what the Coke 16 is, so the audience knows what we're talking about.
Yes, my name is Ramon Hernandez, and what we're doing is that we're suing Coca-Cola for racial discrimination, and among other things, we're going to be bringing up a lot of subjects once we go to court, but I really don't want to give them out too much right now, because as it is, I know they're listening to the show.
So, but you have heard, essentially, there are grievances among the workers there. 16 of you were fired, is that what happened?
Yes, we started a group, well, not Title 16 are fired. Like, I think it's about like two or three of us are not working there. Will is working there. I don't work there. I worked there for 15 years until I was let go. But we have, the total group is about 34 of us now. It's not just 16.
So this is an issue. I mean, Coca-Cola, famous, the most famous brand probably in America. Everybody knows it. Everybody sees the commercials and all the rest of it. A lot of them don't know that Coke is involved in a lot of very contentious issues overseas in Central America and Latin America, where unions have been very hard to, you know, find, get recognized. And there's been conflicts between the Coca-Cola company. We had a discussion of this earlier. There's a whole campaign against what they call Killer Coke. And so we're happy to have workers on the program to actually talk about how you see things in the world. But I'm glad that you found Bill's work of interest. I do as well.
Yes, yes. Not only Bill's, but your work also. Just very enlightening. And I challenge anybody to, you know, either pick up one of the DVDs and check them out. I mean, they're very informative. And yeah. You guys, one thing that I see about you guys is that you guys have a big heart. I mean, you guys understand exactly what we're going through and where it is that ugly. Exactly what you guys describe, it is that ugly.
Well, I come, you know, from a working class family in the boogie down Bronx and went to high school with Clinton. We just had a big alumni event last night. And, you know, my father was a worker in New York. So I'm, of course, very sensitive to, sympathetic to, concerned about what's happening to working people and their rights being kind of watered away or frittered away in the society by the power of big corporations. Just in the New York Times today, a very interesting article about how education that the government is subsidizing for-profit colleges at the expense of public education. Wow. D. Clinton is facing this situation as well, where there's a threat to close the school after 115 years of serving the city because it doesn't fit with somebody, some quote reformer's vision of what a school should be. You know.
Hold on.
I'm not sure your mic is up. Is it?
The more things are about money, the less quality things are going to be about. The more expense of the planet it's going to be about. The more expense of people it's going to be about. Like Dan Rather brought out that it's at the expense of, you know, quality media. It can't be about the truth. If someone wants to make a profit, well, we got to get rid of something. Okay, the truth, quality, nutrition, you know, everything is just going to become pure junk.
As a man from the Bronx, I mean, you can recognize that Brooklyn inflection. Here
That's right.
From Catherine. But you know, guys, Bill, I'd like you on this as well, because one of the things I've found interesting with the Occupy Wall Street movement is that it's been very open to all different points of view. And there are many libertarians there and a lot of people concerned about the Fed as an issue, you know, transparency at the Fed as well. There was just a report this week, I believe, from a Public Citizen showing that the Fed has engaged in all these settlement practices, very rarely holding the banks that are under their system to account. And a guy like Jamie Dimon, the head of J.P. Morgan Chase, is on the board of various New York Fed committees, even though, you know, he should be probably in jail, but certainly investigated for this loss at J.P. Morgan Chase, which is now hitting $7 billion.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's no difference between the Fed and the big banks. The name merely is to make people think that the Federal Reserve is some type of governmental agency that will keep control of the banks, when in fact we all know there's a revolving door between the Fed and the big banks. It's just a giant fake out. It's not actually a regulatory agency of the U.S. government. It's just a lapdog for the biggest banks.
How could that happen, given the scrutiny, you know, of our media, you know, that Dan Rather sort of at one point sought to, you know, aspired, you know, to achieve? And yet here's a story. The Federal Reserve Bank, the most powerful institution maybe in the world, totally under scrutinized. If you ask Americans what is the Federal Reserve Bank? Who runs it? How does it? What does it decide? What does it do? How much money did it spend bailing out banks? How come it can print money? You know, none of these questions seem to be raised in our media, Bill. Why is that?
Well, no, that's because J.P. Morgan decided that in order to get through the Federal Reserve Act in 1913 in the first place, this started a long time ago. He knew that he had to start buying up the newspapers. He had to control the message, because the Fourth Estate is absolutely, as Dan rather correctly said, the beating heart of freedom in the United States of America. And they have completely co-opted that when it comes to the question of the bank, when it comes to the question that banks are in complete and total control of the quantity of U.S. money, and thereby we no longer have a democracy. As Mr. Hellyer, the former Secretary of Defense of Canada, put it in his speech, there are no democracies in the Western world at this point, because they're all controlled by the banking class, the plutocracy.
We've actually had a few and the Fed rallies. You know, me and Dan Panzella of Truth Squad TV, and a handful of us, definitely not enough. And Dan Panzella actually made, you know, he calls them Bernanke bucks. You know, it's just like a big bill with, you know, Ben Bernanke's face on it. And on the back is just a list of facts about the Federal Reserve, you know, so that we can hand them out, educate the public, like letting them know that the Fed is a private institution. It's not a government institution, and that they do, in fact, just print money out of thin air that is not backed by anything.
Well,
and we're definitely due for another End the Fed rally.
That's not the problem. The problem is not the Fed. The problem is the big banks.
Right.
The big banks create all of the money, all of it, and they create it at interest. And they have they have gotten government to give them the right to loan out a certain amount of money to 10 different people, the same from the same pot of money.
Right, that
it's
fractional reserve banking.
Guys, we're talking about the Fed. People don't know what it is and all the rest of it. But what do we know? What do we know about a corporation like Coca-Cola? Everybody knows about Coca-Cola as a drink. Some of us know how cocaine was part of the original Coca-Cola formula. Some of us know about, you know, how they tried to create this new Coca-Cola and it was rejected by a lot of people because it violated traditional ideas about what Coca-Cola is. People know about it as a consumer product, but do they know about it as a corporation? Now, you guys have been really discovering more about this corporation. I think the head of the corporation was just in town and there was a protest. Tell us about that.
Yes, on this past Tuesday, they were giving him some kind of award for the work in Latin America, which I found to be a little funny, that here he is being sued by Hispanics and blacks about racial discrimination, and he gets his award, and as we heard, three of the members of the people that gave him the award happened to be Coca-Cola board members. So it's like you go to a store, you buy a trophy, then you go home and show it to your buddies and say, hey, look what I earned. He didn't earn that. He didn't deserve that. And we went in there, we crashed the party, and we brought the children and stuff, and the guy went around the block and used a service entrance because he didn't want to face the music. So the guy is not only a liar by what he did at the shareholders meeting, but he's also a coward. He would not come out and face us when we were protesting.
You know, Coca-Cola is not just a drink. This is a gigantic company. They talk about the Coca-Cola system of distribution.
Yes.
You know, in many ways, it's a multi-local corporation because there are local Coca-Cola bottlers in various countries. If you go down to the Coca-Cola Museum, can you imagine a company has a museum for the public in Atlanta? You can actually drink Coca-Cola from different countries, and it has different tastes. They're actually customize the taste of Coca-Cola to different countries. So, you know, this is a gigantic marketing machine, and the thing it markets best is not Coca-Cola, but its image. And you guys are questioning its image.
Yes, we are.
Well, we know that this...
So whatever you do, don't come on my radio show and talk about it, because that could get me in trouble.
Okay. Well, we know firsthand that the image that they're projecting, it's has basically nothing to do with what actually goes on behind closed doors.
Yes, sir.
Behind closed doors, it is a lot uglier than what they're portraying out on the media and to the public.
That's exactly what Dan Rather said. It's always the behind the scenes, you know, that nobody wants you to see, whether it's, you know, in your house, at Coke, at CBS.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting about image and stuff. You know, I raised this with Dan Rather. You heard the interview, Bill?
Yeah.
You know, I try to bring out a point which is kind of maybe subtle for people who don't know much about how television works. I worked at ABC 2020 for 8 years doing stories. And, you know, generally speaking, producers are encouraged to, find visual elements that will extend or amplify the points they're making, you know, to use graphics particularly. And the idea is that the public, you know, they're dummies, you know, that's the idea, you know. There's a phrase in television called MIGO. I don't know if you ever heard it. It's called my eyes glaze over. It's what it stands for.
Wow.
If there's something that's too complicated. So we always have to use like little graphic, you know, elements. And in the case of Dan Rather, those things that they use were these documents that they had. You know, somehow the documents were, you know, the core to the story. The documents were actually just trying to make the story more visual. And that's how they caught him, because there was some questions about the documents. Not that the documents weren't true, but in their view, they weren't proven. So you can't verify it with some other source. Therefore, they could question it and challenge it. Therefore, challenge the whole story. And Rather becomes the issue instead of George W. Bush, who's the man the story was about. And this is how it works often. You know, you're a filmmaker, I know, Bill, and you face this issue as I do. You know, he was referring to my films. I made the film Plunder, The Crime of Our Time, In Debt We Trust, WMD, Weapons of Mass Deception, right, and others trying to challenge conventional wisdom. And I have the illusion that I can make a living doing this, which often is not true, Bill. I like your model better, putting it up on YouTube and giving it away. More people probably see it. But
do you know Jim Robinson and Robert Garcia?
I don't know.
Okay. Never mind.
Anyway, I'd love you to see, you know, some of my work as well. And, you know, because I think, you know, you've been very gutsy and courageous in speaking your mind. And you also come out of a journalism background, as do I. So, which started, by the way, back in the Bronx at Dewey Clinton High School, where I was the editor of the Clinton News, our student newspaper. And I think this is what is needed, you know, to give young people opportunities to learn skills of how to be in the media, how to develop, you know, their own talent for communication and for expressing their outrage about what's happening in our world. As long as they're kept quiet, it's going to be, very difficult for them to be successful.
If I could just explain what the control mechanism is in this day and age, and I have two friends that were at the top of the radio division of one of the big three networks, and they were laid off. And when I first put out The Secret of Oz, they called me and said, this is great, this is so right on. And they explained how the banks controlled the network. And that was because every network is mortgaged out to the max, just like every American homeowner is mortgaged out to the max on his home. And so they can't even afford to pay the interest on the loans. The loans have to be completely rolled over. And in this case, J.P. Morgan told the network that they had to fire the top tier of executives or they would not roll over the loan, and that's why they all got pushed out the door. And so that's just a little story to illustrate what the control mechanism is.
An important story as well. This book we had Barry Jane Dyke on about the Pirates of Manhattan. He shows who actually finances and invests in and holds control over the networks, the Wall Street firms, and the percentage of ownership that they have. Ray Rogers is on the phone, Catherine. You don't know this. Ray was on with us before. He's part of this Killer Coke campaign. Ray, we have a very little time left. Do you want to make a comment?
Yeah, Danny. The lawsuit that these two gentlemen, Ramon and Will, are talking about states that black and Hispanic workers produce Coca-Cola beverages in a cesspool of racial discrimination, and there is an endemic culture of racism at Coca-Cola that runs through its management and supervisors at its New York bottling plants in Elmsford and Maspeth. I can also say the same thing up in Smithtown. and that their workers, not only have workers been suspended for weeks, found not to be guilty of any infractions and not been paid, but they've also been fired like Ramon there. And, you know, this is a company that's out of control, operates like a criminal syndicate with impunity. And it's one thing, the racial discrimination here in these plants. Remember, this is a company that paid the largest racial discrimination settlement in the history of this country
in
2001.
You don't seem to like them too much.
I don't like them at all.
Ray, what's the URL for your website so people can check it out?
KillerCoke.org.
KillerCoke.org. Thank you, Ray Rogers. Thank you, everyone, for being on the program. We're running out of time. Once again, we have very, very little time, and I want to try to say my last things here, Catherine. 10 seconds, no more.
Speaking of Coke, there's going to be a free Coke Brothers, the different Coke, the Coke Brothers Exposed. It's a free showing at June the 4th, 7 p.m., Workshop Theater, 312 West 36th Street between 8th and 9th Avenue, New York City.
There you go. I'm Danny Schechter, your News Dissector. Thank you for listening here to News Dissector Radio on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. You can write to me at dissector@mediachannel.org. Love to hear from you and have your suggestions. Thanks, Matt. Thanks, everybody at PRN, for bringing this program to you. Here's the voice of Bernie Madoff.
I operated a Ponzi scheme through the investment advisory side of my business. I knew what I was doing was wrong, indeed criminal.
The shine on America's shoes got gold.
When Wall Street stepped into the fold,
Congress paid off workers laid off.
Stanford, AIG, and Madoff.
Credit swaps, credit stops, empty wallets and empty shops.